This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It's now 23 years under such yoke around our neck. The process, of course, we access science and technology from countries who are willing to support us. And the Russian Federation is one.
That's Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa on Russia transferring 18 helicopters to Zimbabwe. Details coming up. Also, Cameroon shuts down markets in an attempt to stop a wave of cholera infections. And UNICEF says it needs $88 million to address food insecurity for millions of people in Malawi. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Russian-built helicopters arrived in Zimbabwe on May 18th, Thursday, in what authorities say is part of an effort by Russia to strengthen relations between the two countries. Analysts say Russia is rewarding Zimbabwe for not joining with nations seeking to isolate Moscow for its invasion of Ukraine. Keith Baptiste attended the event in Harare, and Salem Salomon has the story.
Ladies and gentlemen, comrades and friends.
Russia held a handover ceremony of 18 Russian-built Ansan medical air and rescue helicopters to the Zimbabwean government at the country's international airport on May 18. Zimbabwe's president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, said the helicopters will help in disaster response and be used by the country's police force. He also took the opportunity to denounce long-running sanctions imposed by the U.S. and other nations for the use of violence against protesters and political opponents.
It's now 23 years under such yoke around our neck. The process, of course, we access science and technology from countries who are willing to support us. And the Russian Federation is one of them.
Russia's ambassador to Zimbabwe said the delivery was part of an eventual 32 helicopters that will be supplied to the country by 2025. The total value of the aircraft is $320 million. Sergei Chemzov, an ally of Russia's President Vladimir Putin and the chief executive officer of the state-owned defense conglomerate Rostec, which manufactures the helicopters, also spoke at the event. He thanked Zimbabwe for its diplomatic support. Chemzov said Zimbabwe is one of the countries that did not support anti-Russian actions at the international political arena. In turn, he says, the Russian Federation is always ready to give a helpful shoulder to the friendly nation.
I have to note that Zimbabwe is one of the countries that did not support anti-Russian actions at the international political arena. In turn, the Russian Federation is always ready to give a helpful shoulder to the friendly nation.
Jeffrey Smith, a human rights and pro-democracy activist with the nonprofit Vanguard Africa, says Russia needs allies in Africa and says the two nations have much in common.
They're both internationally isolated because of their anti-democratic leadership and the fact that they're beholden to, oppressive, autocratic, kleptocratic rule. They share much more in common than they have differences.
Some observers say Russia is looking to continue to expand its influence in Africa. Oleksandr Kovalenko is a military and political observer with the Information Resistance Group, a Ukrainian nonprofit organization countering Russian propaganda.
For Russian, Africa is very important springboard for a spread of influence, not just political, but also military and most importantly, resource expansion.
Critics of the deal point out that Zimbabwe is rich in natural resources like diamonds, platinum, gold and copper, which are of great interest to Russia. As the war in Ukraine and international sanctions continue to take a toll on Moscow, experts say Russia will continue to make overtures toward African countries. With Keith Baptist in Harare, Zimbabwe, Salim Salomon, VOA News.
In more news from Zimbabwe, authorities in that country today started releasing 4,270 prison inmates who were granted amnesty by President Emmerson Mnangagwa earlier this month ahead of general elections. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the development is welcomed because it eases overcrowding in Zimbabwe's prisons.
Pardoned inmates leaving Harare Central Prison Friday. They refused to speak, but joy was written all over their face, most of them at least. Shepherd Mpofu, the acting head of the Zimbabwe Prisons and Correctional Service, is grateful to President Emmerson Mnangagwa for granting the amnesty and reducing the prison population. He says previous amnesties have shown that few of the inmates will return.
This shall go a long way in reducing the prison population. We are making justice to that statement of rehabilitating our inmates. And once we look in the past experiences or in the past amnesty that have been granted, we can tell that only maybe 2% or 3% they are coming back to prison, those who have benefited from amnesty. So by looking at those numbers to say just 3% they are returning to prison, they are good numbers to show that our rehabilitation activities that are taking place in prison, they are learning more. What I can now say to the society is for them to accept them when they come out.
President Mnangagwa announced last month on Zimbabwe's Independence Day that he would pardon some inmates convicted of minor crimes. Edison Chiwota heads the Zimbabwe Association for Crime Prevention and Rehabilitation of the Offenders, an organization that works to rehabilitate prisoners and reintegrate them into society. He says many of the released prisoners were forced into committing crimes because of severe poverty. He welcomes the release of the inmates, but says the prisons remain overcrowded.
When we talk of a number that is swelling from up to 22,000, and we have a prison that has the capacity of 17,000, for us, it's just something that has been done, but it does not really alleviate the challenges that are faced by the prisons. We can only say this is meaningful when the number has just dropped from 17,000 to otherwise 15,000 and below. And that's when we can say there has been a meaningful.
Zimbabwe last had a prison amnesty in 2020 when President Mnangagwa said it was necessary to decongest prisons while the COVID-19 pandemic was raging worldwide. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Officials in Cameroon have shut down markets in an attempt to stop a wave of cholera infections spreading through all 10 regions of the Central African state. The government says more than 20,000 people have been infected, but the figures may be higher as most of the country's 26 million people do not go to hospitals for treatment. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé that some hospitals are overwhelmed with cholera patients.
Sanitation workers on Friday washed and disinfected toilets, pits and septic tanks at Acacia Market in Yaoundé's 6th district. The market sees at least 5,000 merchants and buyers each day, but district officials say it has been sealed to stop cholera from spreading. Catherine Mubatata is one of the district's workers.
When the Ministry of Public Health announced that there was cholera, we immediately started telling civilians to boil water before drinking, clean or disinfect their toilets regularly, stop defecating in open spaces and in the bush, and to wash all fruits before selling and before consuming the fruit. The fast spread of the disease is an indication that a majority of Cameroonians are not respecting basic cholera prevention steps.
Tata said ongoing heavy rains in Yaoundé trigger floods that cause breakdowns in the sanitation system and contaminate the environment and water sources. The Cameroon government says the Mfundi, Etude and Mokolo markets in the capital were also sealed this week to stop the cholera spread. The government says men between the ages of 21 and 35 years, who constitute a majority of traders, are the most affected by the ongoing wave of infections. The present wave has affected more than 20,000 people and killed several dozen since April 17, according to the government. Cholera treatment centers like the Jungolo Hospital in Yaoundé say they are overwhelmed by an influx of patients. The government of the Central African State says the real number of infections and fatalities may be higher as humanitarian workers are not able to visit more remote towns and villages. Humanitarian groups say about 1/3% of Cameroon's 26 million people visit hospitals when they are sick. A majority prefer to go to African traditional healers. Anjembe Esola is the highest government health official along Cameroon's eastern border.
En date du 27 avril, la
Esola says cholera has also been spreading in Cameroon's east region that shares a border with the Central African Republic since April 27, when the first cases were detected from travelers that came to the region from Yaoundé. Esola says the government is taking measures to ensure that the disease does not reach congested CAR refugee camps. The government and humanitarian agencies are cleaning the refugee camps, providing clean drinkable water, and educating civilians to wash their hands regularly and stop open-air defecation. Cameroon's Public Health Ministry says all 10 of the country's regions have reported the spread of cholera, a bacterial infection that causes severe diarrhea and dehydration, usually spread by eating or drinking contaminated food or water. It can be fatal if not treated in hospitals. Humanitarian groups say poor and unreliable water supplies in all Cameroonian towns and villages contribute to regular cholera outbreaks. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, says it needs $88 million to address food insecurity for millions of people in Malawi. The agency warns that at least 573,000 children in the southern African country are at risk for malnutrition because of the impact of Cyclone Freddy in March. Lamech Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
In the new appeal Friday, UNICEF says the impact of Cyclone Freddy, which displaced 659,000 people in Malawi, has significantly increased many challenges in recent months. Among the challenges is acute food insecurity affecting 3.8 million people in 21 districts. The situation has put an estimated 574,000 children under 5 and 228,000 pregnant and lactating women. Stanley Mwase is a nutrition specialist for UNICEF in Malawi, responsible for emergencies.
We know that specifically in terms of nutrition, with the loss of food, as well as the increasing childhood illnesses, there is a high risk of malnutrition. Already, we've already started seeing the increases in children who are undernourished rising in the affected districts. So UNICEF would like to mobilize these resources so we can effectively respond to the impact of the cyclone.
Malawi has seen an increase in malnutrition cases among children over the last 5 years. UNICEF says in 2023 alone, it estimates that over 62,000 children between 6 months and 5 years are at risk of severe acute malnutrition, often called wasting.
Now, with all the problems in terms of childhood diseases, including diarrhea, including malaria, or the increase, the number of children who are expected to be malnourished will increase.
UNICEF says they requested $88 million aims to meet priority needs, such as ready-to-use therapeutic food for treating severe acute malnutrition, access to safe drinking water, as well as basic sanitation and hygiene items, plus education, child protection services, and cash transfers. Maziko Matemba is the community health ambassador in Malawi. He says UNICEF's appeal should be a wake-up call for the Malawi government to implement its strategies against malnutrition.
Because the reason why all those strategies were being launched was to make sure that there's sufficient nutrition supply to children, but also to other citizens. It's like a wake-up call. It also helped government to plan amidst all what is happening in the country.
Records show that in the first quarter of this year, the Malawi government, with support from UNICEF, screened 140,307 children under the age of 5 for acute malnutrition. About 500 of them had severe acute malnutrition and were referred to health facilities for further care. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Amnesty International and Kenya's National Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission have released a joint report saying that Kakuma refugee camp is not safe for nearly 1,000 members of the LGBTQ community. The report says they face extreme abuse. From Nairobi, James Shibanyula has more.
The Kakuma camp, north of Nairobi, is home to more than 200,000 refugees, including nearly 1,000 people who identify as LGBTQ+. Amnesty International says lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex refugees in Kakuma routinely suffer serious hate crimes, including rape. It released a new report at an event in Nairobi on Friday. Speaking from an undisclosed location, one LGBTQ+ Ugandan, who preferred to be called Alex Katongole, spoke about his experience in Kakuma.
I got several attacks there, and we were getting very, very, very serious attacks. Lesbians were being raped. Transgenders were sexually harassed.
Irungu Houghton, Amnesty International's executive director in Kenya, says authorities ignore such human rights violations.
Simple request we are making of the government of Kenya, the United Nations High Commission for Human Rights and development partners is that they provide services and they provide protection for all refugees. The report documents hate crimes, discrimination, the failure to register on time and to provide services for LGBTQ.
Same-sex relations are illegal in 32 of African countries where they are punishable by law. In Kenya, same-sex acts are punishable by up to 14 years in prison. James Shimanyula reporting for VOA News in Nairobi.
Reporter Henry Wilkins is on Chad's border with Sudan, where he heard gunfire and explosions and saw bodies, casualties, and even stray bullets coming across the border from the town of Tendalati, Sudan, about 900 meters away. Observers, they say, concerns are growing that the intense violence in Sudan's western Darfur region could spread to neighboring countries. Meanwhile, Chad's police chief told VOA he is urging citizens to remain calm. Here is Henry Wilkins' report for VOA from Koufaroun in Chad.
In the town of Koufaroun on Chad's border with Sudan, the sound of gunfire is heard coming from the town of Tendalti, about 900 metres to the east. Fighting had broken out overnight there between ethnic Arab armed groups and what witnesses said were black Sudanese civilians attempting to defend themselves from what they referred to as Janjaweed. Injured men began coming across the border to seek refuge and medical attention. A man with a bullet wound in his left shoulder said there had been clashes over the border and some armed men have entered the town. A vehicle arrives to take the injured man to the nearest medical centre. Analysts say that intercommunal violence in West Darfur, triggered by Sudan's internal conflict which started on April 15th, is likely to spread across the border to Chad. Bakary Elmedni, a public administration professor at Long Island University in the United States, is a specialist on conflict resolution in Sudan.
It's not in the interest of Europe or the United States or anyone for Sudan to continue to be in conflict, because it's 100% positive that the continuation and prolonging conflict in Sudan will spill over.
Back in Kufrun, chaos sets in among the thousands of Sudanese refugees who fled into Chad. The bodies of friends and relatives begin to arrive across the border. The refugees pulled the shirts over the faces of the deceased, makeshift shrouds. VOA counted at least three bodies. For some, the scenes were too much. Analysts point out that the Darfur War of 2003 quickly spread to this area of Chad. Hoinathi Ramaji is a Chad-based analyst with the Institute for Security Studies.
It's something that's very dangerous, and that can very easily spread the fightings to Chad, because the composition of the forces and presence itself, it's very ethnic.
Chadian security forces begin to clear the area of crowds as more bodies come in. Later in the day, the Chadian chief of police, Hamid Daouda, gave this comment to VOA on the events that took place in Kufrun.
If it happened that the rebel Sudanese shot the gun or not under the Sudan government, I've said that all the measure has been taken. All are in control now. So if you have seen it happen, it will not happen next again. From where they saw it coming, measure has been taken to master it. Thank you. Keep cool, you know, and walk. Keep cool.
500 meters inside Chad, one bullet hit the ground nearby and another zipped past. Some members of the crowd began to panic and retreat. This reporter left the area. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Kufrun, Chad.
Leaders of the world's richest democracies today agreed to stiffen sanctions against Russia. Also, a draft communique to be issued after the Group of Seven talks in the Japanese city of Hiroshima stressed the need to reduce reliance on trade with China. Charles de la Desma with the Associated Press has more.
Leaders of the world's most powerful democracy have vowed to tighten punishments on Russia for its 15-month invasion of Ukraine, days before President Volodymyr Zelensky joins the Group of Seven summit in person on Sunday. A US official who spoke on condition of anonymity to preview the announcement says the Biden administration's component would blacklist about 70 Russian and third country entities involved in Russia's defense production and sanction more than 300 individuals, entities, aircraft and vessels. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The summit, which ends Sunday, will include talks with a wide number of nations and regional blocs such as Brazil and India. The African Union also will have a delegation there. In African basketball, BAL action kicks off tomorrow in Kigali. Two games will be played over the weekend when the two conferences will clash on the road to hoist the BAL Season 3 championship. The first game tomorrow will be State Malien versus the Cape Town Tigers, and the second will be Al Ahly versus the hometown team Rwanda Energy Group. On Sunday, the first game will be AS Douanes versus CFV Beira. The last game of the weekend will be Petro de la Luna versus the ABC Fighters. This is a knockout phase, so winners will advance to the next round. To keep up with all the BAL action, check out voaafrica.com. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.